Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
That bass drops in, you know, it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you were one of our geeks and snakes using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, making your life better. We're gonna help. The only way we know how, by filling your ear holes with gaming goodness for 90 plus minutes. Because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Brooklinen and Quip. They bring the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who, like me, is just sick and tired of having to address real world violence and tragedy before we do one of these, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. And yes, everyone here from the show, we send our most heartfelt condolences to everyone in New Zealand and all of those who lost friends and loved ones and
Muslims around the world as well.
Yep. Hatred against one of us is hatred against all of us. And there's a great, I wish it didn't have to exist, but there's a great post in our subreddit kind of talking about the world that we can help build. And as these horrible experiences happen and the things that we can do to put good into the world. And, you know, we need to keep doing that and not accept hate. Not accept it, not let it be normal, and keep spreading love everywhere and anywhere.
Yeah, well said. It sucks, man. It sucks to do a show. You know, this particular tragedy has tendrils in the video game community and the hobby. And, you know, we're going to do a show. One of the big games we're talking about is a game where the fun is dressing up in paramilitary outfits and shooting a bunch of people. And that's a hard thing to reconcile for me, to get all excited about this hobby that I love and these flights of fancy, these escapist games that are violent and realistic. And to be able to have fun with that when these kind of horrors are happening in the real world with, I don't know how to reconcile that. And I don't know how to start the show without acknowledging that. We are going to have fun. That's the purpose of doing this show, is to have a good time and to celebrate the joy and the community and the togetherness that you can find in common play. And I don't know how to reconcile it. It's a hard, hard thing. And I wish the world wasn't like this, but I think you're right, Christian, that it's important to put love in the world and reinforce that, and that's what we try to do every week. So, again, you know, it's not about us; it's a It's about the horrible state of affairs in the world and the people that are going through it. Your heart goes out to them, but part of me is like, how do you even talk about video games? But we will. Yeah. Yeah. The good news is we have a good guest to do this with, and we're going to persevere and we're going to have a good time. Yeah. You know, that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, oh man, I'm excited because DLC stands for devouring lots of content, because from the I Eat Games YouTube channel and Twitch stream, our friend Mark DeSanto is back with us again. Hey, Mark.
What's up, guys? Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. We are recording this on Sunday, and that's, yeah. I guess that's the other a strange bit about this particular episode, is that likely when you're listening to this, there has been some Titanic news that we're not going to talk about, yeah, because it hasn't happened in our world yet. GDC starts next week, and there's going to be tons of stuff. I mean, Google is going to be showing off their new streaming service, and I think Oculus is debuting a new headset. There's lots of cool stuff. We'll be all talking about lots of that next week. I'm going to GDC, so I'll have some bonus content interviews and stuff for you as well.
Oh, that reminds me real quick. I know, yeah, I talked about it last week about a bonus content interview with one of the composers of Devil May Cry 5. Because of reasons, we're not able to publish that right now. Hopefully, maybe we can. There's some good stuff in there. But just FYI, I know I teased it. It was a great conversation, but the world is bigger than a conversation sometimes.
Don't keep saying it was a great conversation and you can't hear it.
Well, I'm being honest, you know, it was amazing and you'll never hear it.
It was amazing and two people had it and those two people will ever know.
Yeah, sometimes that's life, you know, it's just,
I enjoyed it. Leave them wanting more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Leave them wanting any, I think is the, leave them wanting some.
It was so good, but yeah, sorry.
But yes, yes, happy St. Patrick's Day. And let's, you know, we're going to talk about happy stuff, but it is hard sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, welcome, Mark. I'm sorry to
thank you.
Have you on in a you know, tough week, but
no, it's been a tough week, but I think I see the show notes. I think we got a lot of fun, cool things to talk about. So
let's start it off.
Yeah. Let's do it.
We always do with story of the week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit, that is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Positivity hanging out in there, that's for sure. It's a great group of people. And I'm proud of that community. So if you're curious, check it out. Some fun folks hanging out over there. Mark, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
All right. Well, lots of good, interesting news this week. But the one that gets me the most excited is that Hello Games is going to grace us with more content, and it's going to be free, which is kind of amazing, because I thought that the last bit of content, what was it, No Man's Sky Next, that chunk of DLC, I thought that was it. I thought Sean was basically hinting that we were not getting any more stuff, and that was sort of like all they were going to do that was free. But man, it's kind of amazing that they're going to be giving this out, because for those that don't know, this game came out August 9th, 2016.
Yeah.
And
yeah, a world ago.
I mean, that's a long time in video game terms, especially with like free content, you know, that's coming out. But this also tells me that this game sold better than maybe anybody expected. I mean, we don't really know the numbers, right?
Yeah, I think, it seems like they touted it when it launched as having a big launch. And I seem to remember numbers, although I don't have them in front of me.
Yeah, you don't think 2016 launch numbers, Jeff? Come on, let me look them up real quick.
Yes. I feel like, I'm sorry, just to finish this thought real quick. I feel like it is a game, though, that continues to either sell, or I think I remember Hello Games kind of saying, every time we release content, we just have a ton of people who come back and they all play for a long period of time. Like, people don't just come in and play for like an hour or two. People play for like 4-6 hours in their game, and they could track that stuff. So I think that's what's got to be driving this free stuff, right? And plus with the guilt. maybe of what happened with launch.
That's interesting. Yeah. So No Man's Sky is getting a big, huge update that is evidently going to be three-pronged. We only know what one of the prongs is so far. This update is going to be called No Man's Sky Beyond. It will be released this summer. And No Man's Sky Next, the last previous huge update to No Man's Sky, introduced actual multiplayer. You know, before No Man's Sky was touted as being this infinite expanse of space that, yes, technically you were all in, but you would never be able to run into each other because it's so big. And then they decided, oh, you know, people actually want to play with their friends. So they introduced some multiplayer features, but they were sort of bare bones. You didn't have the kinds of things you expect from a multiplayer experience, like friends lists and stuff like that. It sounds like Beyond is going to include more of that stuff, although they didn't enumerate exactly what that would be. It does sound like that's more along the lines of what you'll see in this next update. The quote from Sean Murray is, "It includes a radical new social and multiplayer experience, which empowers players everywhere in the universe to meet and play together." I don't know how radical that might be, but
inline skates for everybody. You know?
It's totally radical. I don't know if it's radical to be able to just find your friend and play with them. I think it's radical for maybe 1998, but it's still, it's cool for this radical for this game, perhaps. We don't know what the other two main components of this update are, but he claims that this is going to be comparable in size and scope to the next one that they had.
Which was the last one. The
previous one. It's confusing.
That was some beefy update, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this is, you know, I think it's going to be another huge update. And they say, you know, a lot of people, it says, "Beyond," this is a quote, "Beyond will be our most ambitious chapter so far and something we've been working ridiculously hard on. We'll continue to support No Man's Sky in this way for the foreseeable future." So they say, you know, people thought that Next was the end, as you said you did, Mark. And it seemed like, you know, that was like their swan song of like, okay, peace out.
Which would have been fine, by the way. I mean,
yeah,
that game's just had a ton of stuff coming out for it. And I feel like they've kind of made up. I mean, not completely, but I mean, there's been a lot of stuff added to it. I'm kind of curious what your guys' relationship is with this game, because I don't remember.
Well, Christian never left his home planet.
Are you serious?
Why would I leave? Awesome. It was beautiful.
Really? But have you played it recently with like the base building and stuff like that? Or was that?
No, I know I should go back. I know people love it, but I am not one of these people Mr. Murray talks about that has gone back. Every time I'm like, yeah, and then I'll update it. I, you know, I'll go through that process, but right. I never actually sit down and spend time with it. And I think it's the shiny new thing keeps distracting me instead of going back to the shiny new old thing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And you're not okay. Really, I would qualify you, Christian, as a never get a second chance to make a first impression kind of guy, right? Because you had an experience with Destiny, for example, as a game that really won you back. And I feel like there are other games where at first you weren't sold and then you were with later updates. So it's not that is the case, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I am playing Destiny 2 again more now. I don't know if the things they've added, I guess for me specifically, having just read about them and watched some stuff online, are feedback loops that seem enticing to me.
Okay,
right.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, it is definitely like sort of a podcast game where you just listen to something and you're playing it.
Kind of zone out and play it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the loop can be a little banal at times, but does this interest you at all, Christian, with the integration of like a bigger, broader social hooks? Like, is that something that interests you at all?
Short answer, no. Longer answer, if like Jeff and you and, you know, a couple of friends are like, hey, we're going to make this our game, then yes. Right. The other part of that, though, equation is that I can only do that like one day a week. It's like, we'll talk about The Division later, where it's like, when I do have friends that squad together, they all seem to have more time to play than I do.
Exactly.
So I never want to hold that group back. There's a weird dynamic of limited popularity within friends, but then not enough popularity to jump in with the huge group. And I feel like that holds me back. Jeff, did you ever dive back into No Man's Sky?
I didn't, no. And I don't know why. I'm rooting for this game. I think it's an extraordinary story. I think it's really cool that they are piecemealing it into something that is much more akin to what I would have, I think, loved if this is what it was at the beginning. I mean, they're backing themselves into it, which maybe is why I sort of am not enthusiastic, because it doesn't feel like, you know, I feel like there are a few games that are on the horizon that are really trying to be that from the outset, you know? And this, the fact that they're sort of piecemealing it into existence is admirable from my perspective, but also kind of has a little bit of a taint of inauthenticity to it, which is kind of unfair, I admit, but it feels like, well, this isn't really the game. This game wasn't always this, right? So it doesn't feel like maybe it is as cohesive as it might be, but I haven't really given it a second and third chance. And I also love the story of it. I love the idea that these guys are still working on this thing and it's really becoming something bigger and grander and more appealing. It's a cool story.
And what a wildly different approach to a game as service, or, you know, updating game where all of the stuff has been free. You look at other games that have come out around the same time as No Man's Sky or since, and how they've handled big updates. And they're usually $20 to $40 expansion passes, right? With other microtransactions built into it. Sean said for this, that there aren't going to be microtransaction. We don't consider it to be an MMO. There won't be subscription. There won't be microtransactions. Like, this is all just free stuff that they keep adding value to this game. And the game can often be found for much cheaper than it was when it launched. I mean, I think it's a testament to another business strategy that seems to be, you know, doing well for them. So maybe more companies will look to this.
But they are also a small, lean team.
Sure.
You know, this is not the size and scope of a Division 2, for example.
Yeah,
these are just a few guys and algorithms. You know, and kudos to them for making that work.
Yeah, exactly. And it is. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it is worth mentioning that not only are the updates free, there are like no microtransactions in this game. There's no like suits that you can buy. It's just the game. You know, you buy the game and that's it. And then you get all this stuff. I don't know if they still feel like they're still kind of making amends for everything that's happened, but they did remember during the lead up. I'm not quite sure how you guys felt leading up to the game, but I was really excited for this game. I mean, that whole like hop into your ship and just fly out through the atmosphere right into space, no load screens. I was like, I am in. That is so rad. That looks like so much fun. And they did. Yeah, right. And so I was just like, I just want to explore planets. But like Christian said, it's the gameplay loop got a little stale. Yeah. But this game, I mean, this next update is actually like the least interesting update for me, because to me, this game is like a solo sort of lonely experience traveling from destination to destination. And there are aliens in the game that you can talk to. And learning languages and stuff is a part of the game, picking up letters and words here and there so you can communicate with them.
Right.
But it is mostly you traveling around by yourself, grabbing stuff. And there is there's something about that experience which is it's appealing because it's what's going to be around the next corner. And it's just me in the suit and the ship. And we're exploring. So
you don't know what the next two prongs are. Those they'll address later. So it sounds like this multiplayer element is only one of a larger update.
Yeah.
I'm hoping one of those prongs is VR. I'm ready for.
Oh my god, that would be so good.
VR.
Oh, that would be so good.
But I've been predicting that since 2016. So
yeah. Well, that leads me to Christian. Let me ask you this then: is there anything?
No.
That could bring you into the game. Like, what would this game need for you to go, okay, I'm going to try it.
No. I don't want to be dismissive, but
it's just like more planets. Cause I've only seen one.
Right.
No, I mean, at this point I am becoming very comfortable in the types of games that I like and that I enjoy and the chance of this game. So here's one.
What it would need to add is skill-based platforming.
And that
in a 2D environment that has hand-drawn animation.
A Celeste 2 planet or an Uncharted 5 planet.
Wow. Okay. There's just nothing but you land on the planet and there's just nothing but Nathan Drake's running around.
I'm on board.
All right. Well, remains to be seen what the rest of the update is going to be, but it's pretty cool. And I agree. This is a big story, and it's awesome that Hello Games is continuing to support this title.
Yes.
And I'm rooting for it. It's a weird thing to say that, like, it hasn't really been persuasive to me personally, but I sort of hope that it is for others. And it seems to be. They keep saying, as you pointed out, Mark, that each of these updates brings in a whole new crop of gamers. So that's great.
Can I add one small thing? One small thing that I'm hoping for this game, sure, just so I can get it on record. I'm hoping that I don't know how they would do it, because I think it's a technical limitation, but maybe. I'm hoping we get like bigger mountains and deeper valleys and bigger, lusher like forests, because it doesn't, every planet seems to be there are peaks and valleys, but nothing like a big,
nothing
huge
drastic.
Right. Like I really need to fly around this mountain. I mean,
you want to free solo something.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear you.
What I want.
That's cool. Yeah. I think that's, yeah, larger range of that's one of the big things about algorithm based stuff, is there often is no there for me. It's like, yeah, well, why am I searching for this if I'm just going to see a variation on a theme? And I love, you know, the Bethesda approach of, you know, handcrafted everything, and some artist decided to tell a little story by putting a, you know, a paper cup in the corner because of that, you know. So yeah,
totally. I totally get it.
Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Well, before I say my story of the week, I just want to say that I'm 100% certain that Sony is buying Rare. So I wanted to say that. I'm totally sure of it.
Good. Good acquisition.
I'm quoting.
Yeah, you should make that declaration in our show so that we can affect the stock price, and then everyone will have a massive amount of downloads for this episode, because it'll influence the industry. And
yeah,
all it takes is someone saying it, right, Christian?
Well, you want to know?
I don't see any complications there.
Yeah, no, I got it straight for when we talked. So it's
broke up there a little bit. You kind of broke up. Who did you talk to?
Oh, it was when we talked last week.
Pizza the Hut. Who?
Yeah. So my story, though, is continuing the theme of No Man's Sky getting updates. Another game that continues to get updates that is also, I think, maybe developers making good. The Halo Master Chief Collection, they had their big coming out party, their pizza party, if you will, on the last Inside Xbox. It is coming to PC, starting with Halo Reach, which is the last slice, so to speak, that Halo fans have been looking for. And Reach is also going to be coming to the Xbox One version as a premium download. What I think is really smart about this, though, is that the multiplayer will be coming for everybody for free on Xbox One. So they always keep the important part of the Master Chief Collection was keeping those multiplayer communities together, having all the content, so they weren't further splintering them with add-ons and map packs and stuff like that. And then, like ODST, it seems, you know, there's the way to purchase Reach to have it included in Master Chief Collection, or if you are a Game Pass subscriber, it is part of that as well, so that's included in your Game Pass subscription. And then on PC, they're releasing all of these games piecemeal, and they kind of said going in order of story, not order of release. So in that instance, Halo reaches first, and then Combat Evolved 2, 3, 4. I think this is awesome. I think Master Chief Collection was pretty incredible when it came out. It definitely had issues. Some of those issues are taking longer to get worked out than others, but I do want to commend the team that 343 and I guess Xbox Game Studios now for continuing to work on this, even if it might not be at the pace some fans want. But when I saw this on Inside Xbox, I thought this was really, really cool. Mark, are you a Halo guy? Did this excite you? Are you jumping back into Reach?
Well, here's the thing. I've actually never played Reach.
Whoa, it's so good.
I know. It feels good. I mean, that's what I've heard from so many people, that Reach is great. Reach is awesome. So I'm definitely looking forward to playing it. I did play, so confession time. I played Halo for the first time all the way through when the Master Chief Collection came out. What was
that's
that,
a good 2 years
ago? 3 years ago? Yeah. So, I mean, I just had never, I did not own an original Xbox. It's the only console I've never owned. And so I did enjoy it. It was good. It was fun to play through all of it. Reach is the one that I really want to play because it just sounds interesting. I'm just impressed with how long Microsoft has stuck with this title. I mean, the whole collection. I mean, I'm impressed that they are working on it.
You're surprised that Halo is important to Microsoft?
Well, just with this in particular, the Master Chief Collection, because it just goes to show. I mean, they could have very easily left it as it was. And I know that's pretty obvious, but so when they announced Halo Infinite, I kind of thought that they were going to splinter off and Infinite was going to be the new like portal to Halo, and it's going to be filled with, I think they're going to drastically change the game. I don't think it's going to be
100 Master Chiefs fall into an island.
I mean, maybe.
He left his guns at home. Luckily, this island is all guns.
It's just interesting. I'm impressed with that they are still trying to get Master Chief Collection on the PC. I think it's awesome. And I'm looking forward to playing.
60 FPS, 4K, HDR support. Yeah.
Is that happening?
For Reach. Yeah. Reach will be.
For Reach will have HDR support too. That's impressive.
Yeah. And
I'm in.
This is just another example for me of the paradigm shift that, credit where credit is due, Christian kept talking about, and I was a little resistant. I mean, it's not exactly what you talked about, but I'm trying to.
Wait, come on, stop.
It's hard for me to give you credit. Yeah, I'm trying. I have to caveat it. It's the new Game Pass future that we're living in, where I'm like, I probably wouldn't have bought all these games again because I played them, but it's on Game Pass, so I'll download them. Yes, I'm already paying for it. We are on the cusp, and maybe by the time you're hearing this, we'll have passed the cusp.
I think it's Tuesday.
it is Tuesday, but you know, some people don't listen to the episodes until later in the week.
Yeah.
Where the subscription idea, the Netflixification, as we've been saying for years and years, of games is really happening. And this is just added value to a service I already pay for because it's relatively inexpensive. And yeah, it's awesome. These are great games. Their little quote is Microsoft wants the PC versions to be, quote, first class. Kudos. Yeah, this is how these
taking
kinds
place in
of,
the 60s during the Cold War. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, like X-Men First Class. This is how tentpole franchises should be handled by the platform holders, right? We want this kind of stuff. And the fact that I'm basically going to get it to what I perceive to be free, it doesn't really free because I'm paying a monthly fee, but it feels free because not having to make a decision to buy something. It's a whole new paradigm, and I'm in it, man. I love the fact that Game Pass works on my PC and my Xbox at the same time. I don't have to make that decision either. So,
and it's a thing now where this is like, you know, interesting for other publishers where, let's say, whenever Reach comes out, some other game comes out that you're also interested in, but it's like, well, I already have Reach. I'll just play that instead of spending, you know, $20 for an indie or $60 for a larger AAA game. And, you know, trying that experience. It's the version of like, let's go to the movies tonight. I don't know. This Ben Affleck movie is on Netflix. I'm sure it's good. Like, I'm sure it's good enough. I don't know anything about that movie. I just see billboards for it everywhere. But or like Bird Box, like, let's go out tonight or Bird Box. And you sit at home and you watch Netflix because it's there.
Right. We've already spent the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool. And yeah, kudos to them for having worked on it this long and making it, they rebuilt the mouse and keyboard controls.
Nice.
It's, you know, it's going to have the downside is, and Christian, you touched on this, but I think it is kind of a downside, is that this, we call it the Master Chief Collection, but it's not a collection. It is going to be released game by game. So it's not
on
like
PC,
you're going to
on PC, right?
Right. So you're not going to be able to just have all the Master Chief Collection in one go. They're going to parcel it out. So they're rolling out Reach first, as you said, but they're all eventually coming, I think, except Guardians. But not all at once. So there'll be some waiting. But that lets each title have its own day in the sun. So
wait, cool. I just realized. You know what? I did not play Halo 4. I played 1 through 3. Okay, so my question for you two, have you both played all the Halo games?
Yes.
What's your favorite?
I think Combat Evolved is probably still my favorite, but
no kidding.
It's hard to sort of trump that first initial feeling of
the memory of longest, the memory of bringing a 200-pound CRT TV and original Xbox and a 100-foot LAN cable over to a friend's house.
It's my friend and I sitting in front of a television split screen on what heroic is the top one? No, what's the top difficulty level? But doing co-op,
Nathan Drake.
Doing the co-op campaign next to each other on the hardest difficulty of Combat Evolved. I don't know if anything can beat that. I do think 5 is up there for me. I think Guardians is awesome. There's only like one or two levels that I was like, meh, but it's very
good. They're all really, I mean, 2 is the air quote worst because of that cliffhanger ending in the single player. ODST.
Nobody wanted to play as, what's his butt?
The Arbiter,
ODST right.
And Reach both blew me away because they found a way to not make not being Master Chief interesting. ODST by changing you and from being a Spartan to just a regular soldier. The little tweaks and changes to that were really fascinating. Reach, the way they did a team dynamic was really cool and awesome. I mean, I think they're all great games. I think if you haven't played any of them, I would honestly probably start. I would not play Reach first because it has mechanics in it that the other games kind of don't, but I'd probably start at Combat Evolved and play them in release order. And okay. I'm jealous because you're going to have a lot of fun.
All right.
Legendary is the difficulty level. Legendary.
Legendary.
R3 Sun in the chat got my back on that one. Legendary difficulty.
Okay. So are you guys going to play all of them again when this comes out on your Xbox One X?
I'll dabble. I'm sure I'll check out how good it looks on my PC. You know, it's going to be rad when it's at, 4K resolution, although I don't have a 4K.
I've had the collection since launch, and I've played them all again. So I'm sure I will play Reach again as well.
You know what they don't say, Christian? You know what they don't say in here?
Huh.
Ultra wide support.
For but PC? I gotta think it'll be there.
Gotta think it'll have that.
Jeff, it's premium level support.
First class, totally. All right. My story of the week, I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk about Ninja getting a cold mill, although we don't think it's a little under a mill, but we're going to round up to a sweet $1 million to play Apex Legends at launch. This is a tricky story to talk about because who cares? It's awesome that this dude is that valuable. He clearly earned that. He commands a very large audience. I'm not going to harsh on the guy for commanding a fee that is justified. He has a lot of influence as an influencer, and it's probably money clearly that Respawn was pleased to spend because it worked out real, real well for them. But Ninja, of course, is Tyler Blevins, the streamer famous for Fortnite, was persuaded to play Apex Legends before or right at its launch by Respawn giving him $1 million. So I think the way into this story for me, and you guys can talk about it however you like, but for me, the way into the story is, does this kind of pay-to-play stuff affect your feeling about what you're seeing, Mark? First of all, does a streamer playing a game make you more inclined to play it? I think probably the answer is yes, even if on a subconscious level. But do you have an awareness of that? Do you have a feeling one way or the other? And if so, does it matter? Does it affect your feeling about that if you know that they're being paid to do so?
To answer your first question, yeah, it could influence my interest in the game, because if I'm watching them play it and it looks like a blast, I'm going to check it out. And the fact that they're getting paid to do it doesn't affect me at all. So for me, it's interesting and it's not interesting, just because I think, I guess what you're really asking is it disingenuous that he is playing the game and getting paid for it, and he's not actually truly interested in it? Is that correct?
I guess. I mean, you kind of don't know if he would be genuinely interested in it because the game wasn't out, right?
He
didn't even have, there was no opportunity for him to find it on his own.
Totally.
So I don't know if even we can frame it in those terms, but is it, it does it feel from an end user's perspective like you've been manipulated?
Personally, me.
Yeah, you.
Not really. I mean, but just because I don't actually watch streamers for early releases and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I guess for me personally, it does not, because I just don't actually watch early content or even day one stuff from streamers.
Yeah. Well, Christian, I know that you have very strong feelings about this kind of stuff. So how did this particular news story land on you?
Yeah, I haven't gone back and watched his stuff or dug in enough to know if how he disclosed it. I to me, that's the key, is disclosure. Once disclosure is made, then I'm A-okay with it. And I think disclosure for an 8-hour stream or whatever kind of needs to be constant, not every 5 minutes, but I don't know, maybe every hour, have a banner saying, you know, this paid sponsored content. What's up?
This is sponsored content.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all you need?
I think that goes a long way toward it, yes, because...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to zero in on this. Do you think that it's different if you got paid $100 or $1 million?
No. Okay. If you're getting paid to do something, you need to disclose that you're being paid to partake in that thing, because I think it will color your opinion about it. It has the potential to, and even if it doesn't, if it's not going to color your opinion one way or the other, why would you not tell your audience, right?
Yeah,
if you're afraid really that your audience knowing something will change their impact of what you're doing, then I think that says quite a bit. And I
agree.
I think disclosure is always a good thing. Maybe it's the former attorney in me. I always do my best on this show to mention when I received a review copy for a game. I don't think that changes an opinion per se, but I think the audience deserves to know it. And I think if I were paid to play a game and talk about it, I think they'd want to know that. Because while I might genuinely love it, the fact that I am paid to play it is very important to talk about. Do you come at this from a different angle, Jeff?
No. I think that's accurate. I mean, I tend to talk about things in our sponsors of this show, which we're actually about to have one. I'm about to talk about a product that I genuinely like, and I'm in a privileged position to be able to say no if I don't genuinely like a sponsor. So I very much hold myself to a standard of not, you know, trying not to be disingenuous about a thing if they're a sponsor, if it's a sponsored piece of content. And we don't have sponsors that are, you know, video games by and large. And if we do, we don't review those video games. And that's going back, you know, 15 years of my career for that decision. I also don't really have a problem with this, but I wonder if it's different. I mean, this guy wasn't being asked even to give his opinion. He was just asked to play it. Right.
But I do wonder, though, if part of the terms was you can't say anything negative about our design decisions. Like, if you enjoy it, say it. But if there's something you don't like, just don't say anything about it. You know what I mean? I'm sure, I can't imagine they paid him $1 million and didn't have something like that in there to trash.
Well,
we don't know. But I would assume.
You're right.
If you're getting $1 million, and even if they didn't explicitly ask you, you probably minimize the things you don't like.
Exactly.
So it does have an effect. I'm sure.
Totally. And also, by the way, the Respawn Entertainment's producer, the lead producer, Drew McCoy, said the studio's goal was to, quote, create a day where you couldn't escape Apex.
Yeah.
End quote.
They succeeded.
A day. But he said a day. So I imagine that means he got paid $1 million for playing the game for one day.
Yes.
That is incredible.
Not a bad gig if you can swing
it. It sounds good at first, but if you're a ninja and you're streaming battle royale games, and then you want to stream something that's not a battle royale game, I remember him saying something like his numbers drop as soon as he stops streaming battle royale games. So does this mean he's stuck forever streaming these types of games? And
no, because he's made millions. He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
But I agree. I would be able to retire as soon as I'm done. But
I mean, anybody
he starts losing money.
Anybody that has success at that level is a victim of their own success to a certain extent, right? You play,
sure.
You play Joey on Friends. It's hard for people not to think of you as Joey on Friends, right? So there's anything that is that level of success, and then you want to do something else, is not going to be easy because you have achieved a zeitgeist, you know? Yeah. And that's just part and parcel with it. There's another angle I don't know if we need to go too far into, but that gets me about this kind of thing, is that I think it's creating an expectation in a lot of young people that they can be ninja. And there's, yeah, you know, if it's, you think it's hard to be Joey on Friends, it's 12 times as hard to be ninja, right? It's, it is, it's the new, dream job, and rightfully so. I get to play video games and they pay me $1 million a day. Or as we found out, $1 million was twice what he earned in a month about a year ago, which means he earned $500,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. Woo! That's pretty good. Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty
I'd
good.
Be happy. That's pretty good.
Again, I think, you know, we're streamer culture is a bubble just like anything else. And it's, you know, there's a lot of, I think, young people that's what they dream of now. And, it's a hard life. It's not an easy life, and it's hard to achieve, even pay your rent, let alone make $1 million in a day. So,
and Ninja's name is getting thrown out here a lot, and just because he is, you know, the biggest or one of the biggest, and this number came out. But I just wanted to get this out, and I don't think we're not trying to single him out. At least I'm not. Apex Legends paid a lot of top streamers to play the game for a day. What those amounts are, I don't know. Ninja might have commanded the biggest market share, but I also feel like he was worth every penny, because it's not only the way I think of it, it's like advertising expense. It's also an appearance fee to some extent. Like, you find your big celebrity just to walk on stage and wave, or, you know, be at the bar in Vegas, right? And like a DJ set by celebrity or whatever, and they get paid however much they get paid. But also, Ninja's is skill based. I mean, he is very good at these games, where he was showing up and performing and winning. And
you're getting LeBron to shoot free throws on your court.
Yes, sure. Yes. So I have no problem with this. R3zen said that they believe he did disclose. It said Apex Legends partner during his stream. Awesome. I think it's great. I think it's a little like, I don't know if someone broke an NDA talking about money. I don't know if it's going to create hostile attitudes between, you know, Shroud or Disrespect or Ninja about like who, you know, is worth the most. But all of those people, all of those streamers, I think, like you said, Jeff, they work hard. It's not easy. Even I think part of what is so hard about it is how easy they make it look. I think they're worth every penny. I have no problem with this at all, especially if it was disclosed that they were being paid.
Cool. But also, didn't EA's stock go up like 11% and they made like $4 billion the next day? Wasn't it something insane like that? I mean, that's money well spent for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a whole other conversation that we don't really have time to get into of how this is the new way to market a video game. And, you know, talk about ROI. You know, if you think of the price of television commercials, for example, you know, give even a fraction, or even, you know, approaching $1 million to several streamers is going to be a better ROI than, you know, sponsoring a commercial that a fraction of the people are going to pay attention to if they even see it.
Yeah.
It's a new paradigm. All right. You know, I kind of feel bad, Christian, you brought up the reference.
It's fine as a reference. It doesn't need more.
All right. Okay. Well, it's news that
it's fact. That it is fact.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about it. Okay, speaking of disclosing, it's time for me to disclose that we were sponsored. The show is possible because we have sponsors, and one of our sponsors is a sponsor I am totally fine in talking very highly of, because I genuinely love it. Brooklinen. Brooklinen, they're my sheets. They're the sheets that I use, that I sleep on every night. My wife and I love them. In fact, we got a second pair of Brooklinen sheets. They have lots of cool styles and stuff that you can choose from. And you spend a third of your life in your sheets. Me, probably less so, because I got two young kids. Probably spend, you know, I wish I could spend a third of my life in my sheets. But you want to feel great. You want to upgrade your bedding. I spent way too much of my life in scratchy, what I thought were fine sheets. But then you go to something that's like luxurious and feels amazing, like Brooklinen sheets. And you realize, oh, this is the delightful and worth the upgrade. Let's say that. I recommend these all the time to my friends. In fact, I think we're going to give some to my in-laws, Brooklyn and Sheets, because we have talked about them to them a lot and they keep asking about it. Anyway, so this is a company that that was founded in 2014. So they're pretty new, but they have already made a big splash. 35,000 five-star reviews. Best of online betting category by Good Housekeeping. People dig them. I dig them. As I said, I sleep on these every night and I love it. The idea is that they're trying to create like five-star hotel quality sheets, but make them affordable and easy to order because it's all online. So what they say, it's luxury sheets without the luxury markup. Some betting is marked up as much as 300%. And guess what? Because my Brooklyn and Sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on, he said easily. Now's the time for your upgrade, and we're going to make it easy. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer just to DLC listeners. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code DLC at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all of their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Wow. The only way to get 10% off your first order and free shipping is to use promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code DLC. Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever. All right. Time to talk about the games we have been playing. So many good things out right now. So many good things to play. Mark, I'm excited to talk to you because I suspect we gave relatively short shrift to Metro Exodus on this program.
Program.
Yes, both Christian and I played it, but I don't think either of us stuck with it.
How deep did you get on it?
I got shallow. I got very shallow. I bounced off of it because I went into a very detailed explanation on an episode. The short version, the TLDR is, it made me feel not so nice just to be in that world, and the real world is harsh, and I didn't want to do that to myself anymore.
Did you get past the first 2 hours?
I think so, but I don't know what point you're referring to.
Okay.
I would know.
Did you get to the big open area, the big snowy open area called the Volga?
Yes.
Okay.
The big open world part. Yes.
The big, but not so big, open world part.
Either way, I did not give this game a fair shake. So I'm excited to hear you, who have played much more of it than I, give your take on it.
Yeah. So I came to Metro Exodus really, really excited for this game. I am a huge fan of Metro 2033 and Last Light. I love those games. Have you guys played those games?
Yes.
Okay. Big fan?
I loved the first one. I started loving the second one. And then I got this massive game-breaking glitch that broke the game, and I couldn't reload a save. And it was
it the Red X versions or the OG versions?
It was the OG. I was playing it on Xbox, and it was a thing where your gas mask cracks and you can't take your gas mask off. So it was like I was cracked constantly. Yeah,
yeah, that's not fun.
No.
Wow, life mimics art. Well, so yeah. Big fan. In fact, I went back and I played Last Light about a week before I started Exodus. So I was primed and ready for it. And the game, so once you get past like the first 2 hours, the unfortunate thing about the game is it starts out pretty blandly. I mean, I kind of wish they would have not included the first 2 hours and just started you in the Volga. So what I wanted out of this game is I was hoping they would lean a little more into the bleakness of the atmosphere and spiders crawling on your arms and some of the supernatural elements too. I mean, it's when it comes to games like this, I think it's really easy for supernatural elements to come across as actually kind of funny and cheesy, but they had a way in Last Light of making them seem genuinely creepy. And so I was hoping that stuff would be there. And of course the survival mechanics, you know, where they sort of foster the feelings of claustrophobia and survival horror, which is stuff I guess you didn't really like too much, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it in the first two games. I feel like, you know, just the world that I'm living in now is depressing and
got it. You know, and it's too much.
It just was a little much. Yeah,
it is. It is. It is pretty bleak. Yeah. So the first area you get to that is open. It is like an open area. That's called the Volga. So the really interesting thing about it is they have this interesting story that's kind of tucked into that section of the game, and it takes place. I mean, it is cold. It is snowy and windy, and it's pretty gruesome to get through. And there is like this local cult that is sort of settled there, and they despise technology because technology brought the devil, which is like the bombs and all that stuff. And so, and there's on the other side of the world, there's this people who oppose the cult. So there's this really interesting local political dynamic. And it felt like that area was telling its own little story. I mean, for instance, there was this time where I was sort of crawling through the remains of this house, and I worked my way up the attic, and there were a few skeletons up there, and these skeletons were all surrounded by empty vodka bottles, and each one of them had like an instrument, and they were very clearly trying to make the best of their final days. And it was like that type of environmental storytelling. It was so interesting, and I loved it. And that's what I come to the series for. But unfortunately, as the game progressed, the linear parts are fine and they're good, but I finished the game and I did like it. It's my least favorite of the three, but I wish they would have stuck to having these open world sections where they had a really interesting plot. Now there is one other section where it is open, like the Volga, and you can kind of drive around, and there is some stuff going on there, and it's not as interesting, but it is interesting, and it's fun to explore it. But there are two other areas that are big ish, but they're kind of linear, and I'm not quite sure why they decided to do that, because you lose that exploration of trying to find what's around this cliff or what's happening over here. And I don't know. I just wasn't what I was hoping for completely, but so, it is a gorgeous game.
Yeah. And what about people that are new to the franchise? Is it something that you would recommend, or you think they should just go back and play the superior games?
I highly recommend anybody who's interested in the series to pick up the Metro Redux games. They are the redos of Metro 2033 and Metro Last Light. In fact, I think those games are on sale still this week. You can get them, I think both of them, for like $7.50 or something. They're super cheap. And I think 2033 is like a 8-hour game. Last Light is like a 12 to 15 hour game. But yeah, that one spends more time in like the Russian metro, and it's a lot of, you remember, it's a lot of more of exploring these dark tunnels, and it has like a stealthy gameplay. I mean, you could go in guns blazing, you could do that stuff, but I mostly tried to stealth, I don't know, like 75% of that game and taking guys out slowly. And I really like stealth games. I like stealth games that don't have a ton of gameplay mechanics. That basically stealth is like you have maybe a light meter, like in the old Thief games, or actually in the Metro game, there's a meter that tells you how hidden you are. But I like it that when you actually kind of have to guess, it makes it more intense. You don't know exactly where everybody is, you know, where you're like Far Cry lighting up everybody and you see everything. It is fun. I do enjoy that. But Metro has this sort of creepiness to it where you don't know exactly where the person is, and there is no peeking around, you know, there's no lean button or anything. And it's like this basic stealth mechanic. And I really like that because, I mean, it's also, I feel like it's easier to not mess up too. Because you know, the thing where you lean around a corner and all of a sudden you're leaning too far and you get spotted and you feel cheated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just none of that. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling here, but I did like the game. It's just not everything I was hoping for. And I played it on Xbox One X, and it is a really good looking game on there.
Yeah, it is that. That is for sure. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't give it short shrift. also, it looks like you have been playing Christian Spicer's 2016 Game of the Year.
No Man's Sky?
No kidding. Really?
No, he wasn't this guy. You know your 2016 Game of the Year was, Christian.
I do. It was the penultimate Guardian.
Pretty good. Yeah.
That's my favorite. Guardian?
That's my favorite. no, so I played The Last Guardian finally. I just finished playing The Shadow of the Colossus.
Were you playing the new remake version or?
Yes. So yeah. A long time ago when I bought that game, I don't get this with games, but for some reason, the frame rate on the PS2 of that game got me some motion sickness. I don't think I've ever had that happen with a game. It was like the only game that did that. So I just didn't play it. I still have my copy, actually. And I bought it on PS3, didn't play it. And then PS4, I got sent a copy from Sony and figured I should really probably check this out. So
you loved that, and that got you.
I really liked that game. And so high hopes for The Last Guardian, and man. Okay, so.
You don't like? Thumbs down?
No.
Christian's Game of the Year 2016? Thumbs down?
I'm telling you, No Man's Sky. No. So the first 2 hours were fine and interesting, but I was hanging on by a thread for the entire game.
Well, we lost Mark for the show. It's a real shame. I can't hear him anymore. It's the satellites.
That same guy that
you're talking. So here's the thing. The story between the boy and Trico, I mean, that's the thing that held me on, but I had a really hard time with the camera. I found it really frustrating. And the performance on my PS4 Pro was not good at all. And it wasn't until I actually beat the game, I found out that you could set, because I'm playing on a 4K TV, there's no options within the game to adjust like performance mode or whatever. But if you go to your PS4 and set it under video to 1080p, it'll force the game to play in 1080p, and apparently the performance is much better. I did not know that until after I beat the game. Someone told me about it. But so the performance was bad, and I had a hard time with the controls, and I think that's part of the performance stuff is the controls with the boy.
Well, there's a lot of debate about that, right, with this game, is that are the controls bad, or are the controls
supposed to be him?
Yeah, indicating how difficult it is to control an unruly beast. Is it a dog that only listens to you sometimes, or is it a video game that is broken?
Well, yeah, no. So there's the boy's controls, and then there's the AI for Trico. And I found it really frustrating. I mean, I was towards the end. I couldn't wait for it to end. I mean, I was all in, pot committed, because I wanted to find out what happened. And the story's really interesting.
I think the last couple of levels of that game are utterly jaw-dropping. I think that the way that story concludes, I'm not going to spoil anything, but where you end up and what happens, I found to be beautiful and incredible.
Yeah, the story is great. It's just the performance, the camera, and the push the stick for the boy to go to do this thing, and he flips around and he jumps the other way. And
it's very old school. I mean, it's not.
Yeah. Sorry. It wasn't really working for me. I'm mostly because of the technical stuff.
Christian, you want to defend your baby at all?
No, I love the game. You can go back and listen to it. Find the episodes where I praise it. I think it's great, but I'm not going to, you know, I don't need a harsh Mark's vibe. If you didn't dig it, that's okay.
No, I think he's harshing your vibe.
No, dude, I don't want to harsh his vibe for not digging it. It makes sense. All right.
We're all friends here.
Your vibe, harsh, Christian. Just so you know, your vibe, super harsh.
Dude, my vibe
I actually really love the game. It's because he didn't want to play No Man's Sky.
Let's talk about The Division 2, which was sort of the big release of the week.
Liked Last Guardian and Mark didn't. Is that The Division?
Yes.
Okay, good.
The Division.
Let's talk about it. Nice. But it's the sequel.
Yes. We've both been playing. I'm playing on PC. Christian, you're playing on PlayStation?
I'm playing on Xbox One, which is where I played the first Division, which is why I wanted to play this one. For some games, like, just get locked in. It's like a console for me, and the Division is Xbox. Most Tom Clancy games are Xbox for me, for whatever reason. Maybe because Splinter Cell back in the day?
Yeah, it felt like an Xbox game, right? Green.
Yeah.
You know, the green
and it ran so much better than the PlayStation 2 and GameCube. I had a GameCube one too, but yeah, that's always been an Xbox franchise. Odd little mental thing for me, but that's how I view them.
Well, I loved the first Division. I put well over 100 hours into it. I know it had issues with the end game that I, you know, eventually bumped into as well, and kind of lost the love for it in the end game a bit. But man, the road to that was a blast, and I played a ton of it with my buddies, and I just adored the first one. I've been eagerly anticipating the second one, and you know, I played some of the beta, but I think the full game really is a superior experience to even what the beta presented, as it should be. But I'm glad to see that. What was your take on Division 2, Christian?
I think the best, it's kind of, I feel like I'm doing this too much now, but ever since I felt so comfortable doing it with ToeJam and Earl. So I'm maybe 4 hours in. Five is stretching it. I don't think I can say five. So I'm assuming you're farther in than I am. But it's the Division. It's the Division 2, right? They took the Division, and for someone, for my play history. Yes. The end game issues for the Division, the first Division one, I never got there. You know, I wasn't playing that game post end of campaign. Those things didn't bump on me. The Dark Zone issues and problems didn't bump for me because I didn't look to the game for that. I really enjoyed the campaign. I really enjoyed whatever it was, 25, 30 hours I spent with it. And then I moved on to something else. And this feels like more the Division. Like, there are some quality of life improvements in terms of, like, and maybe the Division 1 got there at some point. I know they kept updating that game, but, you know, the way you're able to equip things, sell things, get rid of things, see what you're supposed to do, the way the map organizes things, the way you're in and out of missions, it all feels like it's streamlined and they've learned lessons from the first one, but it's the Division, right? Like, to me, there's no huge reinvention of what this franchise is or what it's trying to be. And so I think if you loved the Division and you want more of that, you are going to love this game. Or if you bounced off the Division 1 and you're not, you know, looking for this type of looter shooter, third person cover based game, don't let the hype convince you that this will be the one that will get you. Because to me, it's very much the same game.
Would you say the same thing about Destiny? And Destiny 2?
No, Destiny 2 changed more things between, and now they're unchanging them. But I think I would have said maybe give Destiny 2 a shot, because if you thought the endless grind of Destiny 1 wasn't appealing to you, this was way back when Destiny 2 first launched, I would say maybe consider Destiny 2 because it has an end. There's a best case weapon, and the narrative is short and concise, and you can play through that. And I really liked the campaign in the Division 2. And Jeff, I'm curious to know your thoughts on it. But I mean, this campaign is sprawling. It's not an 8-hour campaign. It's much like the first one, where it's, you know, my guess is 12 to 18 hours, depending on how much side mission stuff you do. Like, this is a big game.
Yeah, and I think it's meant to be your game you're married to. You know, it's meant to be a looter shooter that you constantly have new things to come back to, and you're creating a long-term relationship with this character.
Yeah.
I would argue that there are a lot of big changes and, in my opinion, improvements on the Division with Division 2. But they're real subtle, I think. And
that makes sense.
It doesn't feel like, you know, now in this one you have vehicles, you know, it's not something like that. It's, you know, obviously a new setting. We're in Washington, D.C. now. And I think the level design is vastly improved, much more interesting. You still have your, you know, your GPS route that will take you from place to place. But now, much more than in the first game, there are alternative routes, hidden things, stuff to be discovered all over the place.
And it's stunning. I mean, Ubisoft, yes, they employ wizards and witches over there, because
That Snowdrop engine, dude.
It's
wow.
I've closed so many car doors. It's jaw dropping. Like, I know it's like,
oh, that made it in, huh?
There are car doors to be closed, but it is.
Oh, nice.
It is stunning inside and outside of buildings with in my playtime, no load times. Like, I don't want to talk about Anthem, but like the scope of this game and the immersion going into even your home bases, your hubs or strongholds, what are they called? Almost seamless. It's ninja wizards and witches. It's unbelievable what Ubisoft does.
Were you gonna say ninjas and pirates?
That was, yeah.
Warriors, there's right. Lions and tigers and bears, it's everything.
I believe it.
There are lots of subtle differences. Like, so I'm so impressed with how it feels like a city I want to explore, and I'm constantly finding cool little nooks and crannies in it or shortcuts and stuff. That to me is super fun. I love that about video games. And I feel like the day-night cycle now is much more important. Night feels way scarier. And not just because, you know, the freaks come out at night or whatever, like in a lot of games. In this game, you really deal with visibility. And because the enemies are denoted and marked in this game is changed from the first Division, which you could sort of – it didn't matter if it was nighttime because you could see them. They were highlighted. Now – you can really get ambushed just on your way to a mission because a roving band of bad guys is hard to see, and you'll find yourself in the middle of them and they're shooting you from all around, which brings me to the next point. I really do feel like the AI, such as it is, I mean, they're still video game characters. It's not super sophisticated, but I think they present a very fun challenge.
Yeah, was there a difficulty? I never noticed one.
No.
You just kind of play.
Yes,
yeah.
But there are challenging missions. They will flank you. They will flush you out. You can't stay in one place for a long time. You know, it is really dynamic in that way. Like, you can't just plant yourself in one spot and shoot, which I tend to do. I tend to be a turtler. And this game, the AI is smart enough to make that not tenable. They will get around you. They will rush at you. They will throw grenades to flush you out. They will do things that prevent your comfortability, you know, which is fun, which makes you have to sort of improvise on the fly, which is really great fun. And I think there's new enemy types, and the way they handle armor is so much more satisfying.
Armor. It's not a hoodie with a bar. it's real armor that you're shooting off, and you're like, okay, I got that exposed. Now I'm going to take this down.
And the way that's communicated in their health bar, it doesn't feel like they're a sponge anymore. It feels like you're literally having to shoot their armor off. And then once they're exposed, they go down like, you know, like a human being might. Numerous, I think, really smart improvements in the sequel that make for a much tighter, cooler experience from my perspective. And yeah, they're not the flashy, like now you can fly or whatever. It's I think more, and I think maybe that's why I brought up Destiny, because I feel like that's what if we had Taormina on the show, that's what a big, deep Destiny fan would talk about with Destiny 2, is like the granular stuff. And I feel like I see that in this game, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. You guys are getting me interested in this game. I've not been interested in Division.
So good.
What's the gameplay loop? I mean, are you just playing against human players, or is there?
No, okay. It's PvE, a PvE grind that's cooperative, and then end game is sort of PvE VP. It's you're playing against players. There's also PvP throughout. I mean, if you want to queue up for PvP matches, you can do that.
But it's optional.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a mode. It's a separate mode. But the majority of the game is looter shooter, cooperative team-based looter shooter, where you're getting cool loot, you're doing missions, you're making new fast travel points, you're unlocking and opening up bigger parts of the map and leveling up and all that stuff. It's realistic that the thing I like most about The Division is the sort of Tom Clancy-ness of it, which is lots of cover, lots of tactics, Moving from cover to cover is very satisfying. There's a button where it'll show you in the HUD, like where you can run to, and then you just hold A and you'll sprint to that next cover point. And so you're stop and pop, cover shooter, team stuff. You get cool tech upgrades that let you heal people or set up turrets or do all kinds of different things. There's a bunch of new ones in the sequel that they didn't have in the first game.
And where are you guys playing this? What platform?
Christian's on Xbox. I'm on PC.
Okay.
It supports ultra wide and it's core.
For me, two nits and then one wish. My nit number one, I love that you can change so much of the HUD and I like the accessibility features, but you can't make the font bigger for like prompts in game. Like you can change the top HUD that kind of shows you where to go or what to do, and you can move that to almost any position on the screen, but the font for other things that you can't change is so tiny. And I'm again playing on Xbox, so I'm sitting far away from my big TV on my couch where I literally have to bring a chair close to the TV because I can't tell like what it's like to do this, push this button, and I'm sitting back on my couch like, what button? And I know I'm not alone in that feeling. Nit two. Well, I do appreciate the challenge of the AI, and I remember this from the first Division. They are all grenade experts, like fail. Also,
there's literally no stealth. Like you pop one guy in the back of the head, and they all instantly know where you are and are yes. raining fire down upon you.
Yes,
yeah.
And then my wish, and I thought Anthem would maybe be this. And Ubisoft, please make this game. I want this game, like literally this game, and then just copy paste a fantasy or sci-fi setting on it because I want to have a big dumb flaming head. I want to have fun silly outfits. And
it's a bummer that they doubled down on realism. It's such a bummer.
I mean, it's a Tom Clancy MO, so I'm sure some people love it. And I don't want to take anything away from the Division 2 because it is a feat and it is an accomplishment. Just my gaming personality when I'm getting all of this loot. I want silly looking knee pads, you know, not just stat bump knee pads.
Just over the top would be fine. Like I don't need googly eyes and bunny ears, but I do want, you know, chrome wings or something rad. You know, I want something flashy and cool, and that's why I love third person over first person. That's why I love games with loot. Is like, look at how rad my character looks.
Yeah.
And you know, there's only so many, so cool your, you know, flak jackets and cargo pants can look. I mean, they do have stuff like, you know, full fireman outfit and, paramedic gear and stuff.
How deep are you? How are you feeling about the campaign? Initially, again, I'm maybe two or three, and then a couple of side missions in. It feels kind of disparate, if that's the right word. Like, I don't feel the connective tissue yet. Like, I get called to an area because I'm supposed to go there, and then I go there, and now I'm doing little things here and there. I really liked the narrative of the first game of, like, this outbreak and figuring it out. How's this game's campaign so far?
I mean, I hear you. I feel like that's not what I, you know, it's not what brought me to the yard.
Sure.
But I feel like in the context of a mission, it's clear and it's cool. And the things I'm doing in missions are super cool. And the variety of upgrades is much broader than in the first game and much broader than in most comparable games, right? Even Destiny doesn't have as many points to invest in. You got all kinds of things you can be doing with your resources at any given time, all kinds of different things you can be working on, upgrading your bases, upgrading your people, getting new people, getting new technology to invest in perks or investing in new different kinds of tech you can use. You know, you can unlock control points and then like hook up the people there with supplies that they're asking for. There's always something new and different to do. There's side missions and main missions and just emergent things that are happening, like somebody's being executed in the street, so you have to stop it, or you know, a supply drop will be parachuted on a street corner, and you know, AI is going to come in and fight you over it. Always something interesting to do, and I love that about the game. But I'm not super invested in. You know, I think the first game asked a kind of interesting question of like what caused the outbreak, and the money was poisoned, but how did it happen? And this game, I haven't really been drawn into any kind of central mystery that way, although it does retain the coolest part of the storytelling from the first game, which is those echoes that you can recreate, which tell like little short stories in and of themselves. And you find them in the open world and they show you basically little audio dramas, tell you little audio dramas about, you know, people right before the apocalypse and what was happening. And you can find, you know, you can follow those threads and they construct a really interesting kind of dark narrative, which is, I find very cool. So I hear you with that complaint, but it doesn't really bother me too much.
I think that's the hard part about these games where I think like, you know, Destiny's approach was they were total. It's very separate, right? There's the campaign that you have to do to hit this level. And then there's the looter shooter part of the game, right? And because how do you make a campaign level infinitely replayable? You know, like what's that? It's difficult. And I don't know if any game has mastered it yet. I think, you know, Destiny's approach is not what people were looking for in terms of you don't go back and replay those campaign levels again. You know, you're not experiencing those moments again over and over and over again. And in The Division 2, you know, one of the big selling points of it, at least initially from the messaging I saw, was like, you've played a mission and now there's the hard mode of that same mission and like how different it is, showing you like the amount of enemies you're going to encounter and how, where they're going to come at you. And you thought you went into this kill box before, but now it's totally different because you're needing to find cover in new places. And I think that's really cool. But for something like that to work, in my opinion, you can't have like a 20-second cutscene, you know, like pulling you through it, 'cause you'd get so bored of that.
Yeah. And this game doesn't, you
right.
know, it really does. I do want to spend, I know another thing I want to bring up before I go there is you had said that you're kind of holding your friends back with some games. One of the things that Division 2 does so, so well, and I love it for it, is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what level I am in regard to you. We can team up always, always, always. And that's great. That's how it should be. We should be able to team up and do missions. I shouldn't have to ask you if you're a far enough level or, you know, feel like I'm lagging behind my friends or anything. It handles all of that for you. It'll even everybody out and make it cool. And I love that part of it. But I do want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about this in regard to Anthem, because they are two sides of a very similar coin, right? They are both looter shooters that came out in close proximity to one another, high profile games, gorgeous games each. And I do believe that one is hitting all the right notes and the other is discordant. And I think it's interesting and illuminative why, you know, figuring out why that is. I don't know if you have any thoughts, Christian, but I think the place I would start, because I do think the pure shooting and moment-to-moment action of Anthem is very fun.
Yes.
As it is with Division. I think the sort of staccato stop-and-start nature of how Anthem does all that is even more put into stark relief for me playing Division, which is all seamless. Yeah, I can fast travel and get load screens, and I tend to want to fast travel a lot in this game. But when I'm not fast traveling, everything is seamless. In and out of buildings is seamless. There's a couple of elevator loads inside of quests, but most of the time I feel like I'm in a place. And more than that, I'm constantly having my curiosity tickled and it's being rewarded. That curiosity is being rewarded because there's something interesting and cool when I go investigate. And Anthem has none of that. It really feels like a beautiful, hollow place for me to do my mission. And I pop in, I do that mission, it kicks me out. And it feels very staccato and unsatisfying.
And there's a countdown to pull you along if you're playing like an Anthem. There's like this idea of exploring on your way to something. Unless someone is ahead of you, then you better not explore because you got to get to that thing. And the Division 2, and I think as well as 1, handles that very differently, where on your way to a mission, you are more than encouraged to explore that curiosity and do that side mission or pick up that echo. And Anthem, as of last time I played it, you know, isn't that. And
you're leaving the quest area.
Yeah.
Turn around.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing, too, is those the load screens and the way that your hub, your home world, is created and represented in the difference between the two representations of your hub. And in Division 2, in my opinion, they, while a video game, feel like these lived in places with little military command people here and there, and you talk to them and they have interesting stories and they're going to send you off and do something. And there's regular people that kind of interact and walk around in those worlds. And Anthem's felt slow and very tonally different than the rest of the game. And while some of the main quest giving NPCs I found well acted and well voiced and interesting, they were such a small part of that world, where most of it was a pretty looking, you know, corridor, outside corridor in a bazaar that I'm walking from location to location to just to get my next checkpoint. And in my experience with the Division 2, the bases don't feel like that. You know, it feels like a command center where I'm popping in, talking to people, getting interesting things. And I think Ubisoft, you know, they've been doing it for so long that they've got it down. I think it's really smartly designed.
Yeah, it is. And I mentioned this before, but somehow when I wasn't looking, Ubisoft became my favorite publisher. I don't know how that happened, but you know, between Assassin's Creed Odyssey and The Division, and I'm probably forgetting a half a dozen others, but it's like, oh, I love Ubisoft. How did that happen? I love Ubisoft. But yes, it's amazing to me how much that little stuff adds up,
yeah,
and becomes a big deal. And like you kind of mentioned right at the beginning, I'd much prefer the sci-fi planet Iron Man fiction to post-apocalyptic, you know, military realism.
Some people lived, others died. The ones that died, died because they didn't own guns. Tom Clancy!
I mean, that's not my jam, right? My jam is, give me that cool sci-fi tale, give me a super-powered exosuit, I'm in. And yet I will be playing many, many, many more hours of Division 2, and I've sort of fallen off playing Anthem, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because it really is those little things that add up and make wanting to spend the kind of time these games ask for.
Yes,
in those worlds.
That, well, they, sorry, Mark. Anthem gives you so many opportunities to check your phone. and the Division doesn't, you know, it is that game you're married to. It needs to keep you in, and those quality of life things are big. Take out the trash from time to time, clean the bathroom, help out around the house, you know, like whatever, like you got to make it work. And the game needs to do its part if it expects you to be playing for all of these hours and committing to it. I remembered my other nit, and this isn't exclusive to the Division. Destiny is problematic. A lot of games, I feel like, are. I'm tired of the silent protagonist in these games because people talk to me for so long, and my character is just a muted nod, and then like the other person keeps talking, and it takes me out of the realism of like, we got to go over here and we're going to attack them. Then there's like a beat, and my character's like,
yeah, you know what? You mentioned that, and that reminds me, Metro Exodus. That bothered me too. Artem doesn't really talk, and that became a problem, right? I mean, there's so
you
many
have to talk.
I know, exactly. And it was even more. Remember Half-Life 2? They actually acknowledged that he doesn't talk like a couple times. Riding in the elevator, Alex is like, "Huh, silent type, huh?" It's like, oh, so now they know too. Like now he's just a weirdo that doesn't talk.
And it was charming then, 30 years ago.
Right. That's so yes, true. We've come a long ways. So my quick question for you two, as somebody who has, I know we're kind of in the same boat because parenting and stuff, but let's say I got like 2 to 4 hours a week and I don't necessarily want to depend on other people. So I want to be able to solo some stuff and still have a really good time. Out of all these looter shooters that are online, like between Destiny and the Division 2 and Anthem, and whatever, there's a bunch of other ones out there. What would you guys recommend I check out?
That's a great question. I will speak to the Division 2 in this way, and I'm glad you brought it up because I meant to bring this up myself. There's something interesting about this game. I played, I would say, probably 60 to 70% of the first Division solo.
Really?
I loved it. Yeah, I think so. I think it was a relatively small percentage that I played with my friends. I played a lot of the end game with my friends, and I played a lot of missions with them. But most of the time I would get on and just sort of grind out stuff and do cool things and, you know, on my own time. Similarly, I have played most of The Division 2 so far solo, mostly because I did get a code and I was playing before the game had released to most of my friends. Okay. And it felt a lot lonelier this time around. I don't know if that's a difference in what I expect out of games or what has happened in the interim couple of years, but I felt lonelier. I wanted more. I wanted to be with people. And to the game's credit, there are systems in place that let you match make with other people. There's, in fact, you'll get notifications of like, hey, somebody's in trouble and they need friends, need help. And you can just hop into a random person's mission because they're running into trouble and they can like call for help. And so can you. I love all that stuff. They make it very easy to play with people you don't know. And I did play a few missions with people I didn't know.
Okay.
But the game is so much better playing with people you do know on sure. comms and doing the whole thing. I don't know how I don't know which game I would suggest.
Division 2 Black Friday. The game's only going to get better. It's only going to get better. It's going to go down in price. You don't need to jump in right now. It's going to be there
You're
for you.
Wait till November?
Wait for a sale. Wait for a sale.
But you know
it's going to go on sale.
I saw the Division 1 and like all the DLC was on sale a couple weeks ago for like $10.
Great game.
Maybe I'll do something like that. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know if I can do it because I need a game I can pause because kids. But
oh yeah, you can't pause it. That is true. Yeah.
I don't think you can pause any of these
games.
Yeah,
I know. That's why I'm reluctant. But you guys are you're talking me into it. It sounds really fun.
Okay, Diablo 3 on Switch.
You can pause that game?
I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, you can put it in the sleep mode. Yeah, put it to sleep. I already have it. Yeah.
All right.
I played a lot of that game. Yeah. A lot.
All right. So moving on from the Division 2. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot because it's I'm proposing to it.
Oh, can I do one last thing? It's a Ubisoft thing too. I keep thinking about it. Again, you're going to love this game, especially if you like the first one. Within 2 seconds, I heard 2 F-bombs. Like Ubisoft, I get it. Where it's immature. Like, come on.
It's really mature.
It's really mature. Yeah. All right, we can move on. But it was like literally like starting a mission. They're like, get the expletive over the expletive already. And I was like, thanks, Ubisoft. Welcome home.
You have to get over the F?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
All right, let me thank our other sponsor, and that is Quip. Quip. We got to brush our teeth, folks. You got to brush your teeth. You brush your teeth? How often do you brush your teeth? How many of us even do it properly? Often enough. Do you use a regular old toothbrush? Do you use an electric toothbrush? Let me tell you about Quip. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. It was designed to make brushing your teeth a more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable process. I haven't had a chance to try a Quip yet. I'm excited to. But the reason I'm excited to is because it has sensitive sonic vibrations that are gentle on your gums. Oftentimes, when people go into the dentist, dentists will say that people are brushing too rough. You're actually destroying your gums by brushing too hard. We always feel like, oh, I'm going to the dentist. I got to brush super hard or else they're going to get mad at me. No, that's not necessary. It's all about being gentle, but being thorough. And the way you can be thorough with the Quip is it's got a built-in 2-minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds. So people like brush for a couple seconds and be done, spit out the toothpaste and go on their day. They don't spend enough time. Quip tells you how long you should do it. It reminds you by pulsing, which is pretty cool. I say 90% of people don't spend enough time brushing. You go hard and fast when you should be going gentle and thorough. And they have a multi-use cover that mounts to your mirror. Pretty darn cool. And the best part, the other big thing that people don't do correctly with brushes is that you keep the same toothbrush for too long and it becomes basically useless because the bristles have worn out. And the thing with Quip is brush heads are automatically delivered to you on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. That's awesome. So it takes care of all the things to make sure you are brushing better. I'm so excited to try one of these. They are backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/DLC now, you can get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com, getquip.com/DLC. Okay, so this week, not too long ago on the show, I really raved about a game called Typo Man, which I played on Switch. It's available on iOS as well. I think maybe on Android. Fun game that combined platforming with words. And this week, a new game came out on Switch, and I got a torrent of tweets, emails. There was, I think, some sort of skywriting from one of you out there. Many, many, many of you said, Jeff, you have to try Baba Is You. This, there's never been a game more made for you. You have to try Baba Is You. I got so many emails and tweets from people. Jeff, have you tried Baba Is You yet? Oh, you're going to love it. Try Baba Is You. And I have to say, in my best Harrison Ford voice, it's true. All of it. All of it. It's true. I love Baba Is You. Yes, it feels like it was made for me. And for the next, I don't know, however many minutes, I'm about to go a little overboard on telling you how glorious a game Baba Is You is. And I have all of you to thank because this game was not on my radar. So every one of you that sent me an email or a tweet about Baba Is You, thank you. And hopefully those of you that were like me that weren't aware of it now will be, because here we are, March, and I already have two games, two Switch games, not by Nintendo, two indie Switch games that are on my top five of the year already. Ape Out and Baba Is You. So this game, yeah, it's serious game of the year contender for me. Not much to look at, not a pretty game, but clever and brilliant. It is a puzzle game. I guess it has some similar DNA to Typo Man, but only because it has words on the screen. This game actually, I think, has more in common with Portal than anything else. It feels like, what if Typo Man and Portal had a baby kind of deal? The idea with Baba Is You, which is a terrible title until you play the game for literally 4 seconds and you go, oh, I understand why that is the title. Baba is a sheep, I think. It's very crude graphics in this game, but it looks a little bit like a sheep. So Baba, if you understand. And it is you. And the reason that you know it is you is because there's a little text box on the screen, little squares of text that say Baba, and then another one says is, and then another one says you. And you go, oh, okay, Baba Is You, which means you control Baba, right? But each of those text squares is movable. So if you move Baba away from Is You, if you literally move your little Baba guy, click, 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 and there's a little 2D surface, little moving square by square, if you navigate Baba around and push Baba away from Is and You, Baba isn't you anymore, and you no longer are able to move Baba, and you're stuck because no one is – you are nothing, and the game's over. So there are other things in the game. There are other objects and things. There's rocks. So you could – if you saw a rock in the level, there would be the word rock as a little square. And if you pushed that little square that says rock over and pushed it down and moved it where Baba was in the phrase Baba Is You, then it says rock is you. And now you're the rock and you're moving. You're not Dwayne the Rock Johnson, but you're moving a rock around the screen.
This sounds awesome.
It is incredible. It is brilliant. Okay, so basically what I'm trying to explain is the rules of the game are in every level. The rules of that level are the level. You are literally manipulating the rules of the game to progress. Each level, and like kind of like Portal, each level is a bespoke little world that you have to solve. So they'll say something like, it'll say something, Baba is you, flag is win. So that means you have to make Baba touch the flag in order to win. But it'll also say maybe rock is push. So that means you can push a rock. So maybe you want to move the words around so that it says rock is win. And then if you can't get to the flag, but you can get to the rock and you can change the rules of the world into the fact that rock is win, then just touching rock means you win. And it gets much more complicated from there. You get and. So, you know, Baba and Rock is you. So now you're moving Baba and Rock at the same time. All kinds of things. So you can literally, like, it'll say wall is stop. Because that's how walls work. If you run into a wall, you stop. But the rule is in the game world. And if you move stop away from that sentence, it just says wall is, then all of a sudden walls don't stop you. You can walk right through them. Or maybe you make it say wall is you. So you literally move all the walls of the level around.
Okay, I've got to play this game.
Dude, it's genius. It is the kind of game. One of the reasons I compare it to Portal is I think all of us that played Portal remember how brilliant that game made you feel.
There was a lot of aha moments, right?
But you feel like you did it, and you feel like, oh my God, I broke the game and I figured out how to do it. Even if that was like the intended solution, it always felt like you discovered it and nobody else discovered this way to do it. I figured it out. And I feel so confident that with Baba Is You, I beat a couple of levels in ways they didn't think I should be able to, but they probably did, right? This probably was the only solution, but it made me feel like I thought outside the box to such an extent that I broke the game and you know, cheated my way to winning the level. But that was probably the intended solution, right? And there are dozens and dozens and dozens of levels. They get super complex, super brain breaking ways that it limits you in all kinds of ways. This is a game where you can move a couple of times and you already ruined it. You can't possibly win after those few moves, but it has another wonderful feature. Literally one button is devoted to rewinding. So you can tap back through each move infinitely and rewind step by step and undo all the things you've done. So you can constantly experiment, try things, die, rewind. It doesn't matter. The game wants you to try things, wants you to mess with stuff. It is brilliant, brilliant. I wish it looked a little cooler, because you look at screenshots of Baba Is You and you're like, what? This looks goofy. But man, is it a brilliant puzzle game. I've never seen anything like it. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like Scribble Knots.
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I mean, not graphically, but just sort of how Scribble Knots was, it just had this sort of freeform playing with language thing. Yeah. Which Typo Man had a little bit, but this is just blowing that all kinds of ways out of the water.
And Scribblenauts had that thing there were cool stories being told by people. Oh my God, I was fighting a dinosaur and I summoned the car, and then a car with like an elevator. And it's just that those stories really carry the game, right?
Yeah. I mean, you don't really have that with Baba Is You, because it's a puzzle game, right? You're trying to figure it out. And I have spent a long time just staring at a level going, how, what do I do? How? And then you figure it out and you go, oh yes, I am brilliant. When of course you aren't brilliant. You just figured it out, the solution that they had. But, and it feels like you just feel like a genius when you come to the right conclusion with this game. I can't recommend this higher for anybody that enjoys puzzle games. It is nothing like anything I've ever played. It's a completely different kind of experience. Baba Is You, playing it on Switch. It's $15. Buy it. It'll probably be on my best games of the year list at the end of the year. And I'm still discovering new things, because I'm by no means finished with it. Christian, had you heard about Baba Is You?
I had heard of it, and I also mostly saw, occasionally people are yelling at you, and then they ping me to make sure that I yell at you also. So that's that's how I saw it. I don't know if my headspace is ready for it. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
I'm still gearing up for The Division. I'm gearing up for Mortal Kombat 11. I'm gearing up for Rage 2. Like, I have this thing in my head, and I don't know if I'm quite
ready
for it. So
Baba Is not you, is what you're saying.
Not yet.
Okay. Yeah. I can't wait for more people to play this game. It's pretty cool. Okay. That's Baba Is You. We did get a listener suggested a review. I always say that if there's a game that you're playing that we haven't talked about, or a game that you wish we talked about more or in a different way, we're open to you submitting mini reviews to us. You can always submit those to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We got one from Casey. He sent one. It goes like this. He says, I have a review for an older game I've been playing a ton of recently. Jeff, I thought you may be interested as it is a game created by Zachtronix, the same developer as the programmy puzzler game Opus Magnum that you revered. I did revere it. I still do. Opus Magnum is great. I stumbled upon Infinity Factory on the PlayStation Store and was instantly intrigued when I saw it was developed by Zachtronix. Infinity Factory is in the same vein as their other games, a sandbox programming-oriented puzzler in which you must create increasingly complex assembly lines using a combination of conveyor belts, welders, pushers, sensors, and more to assemble an object out of smaller elements. There are an infinite number of solutions to any given puzzle, and the game tracks certain metrics to tell you how elegant your solution is compared to the average. All the while, it presents a kooky story in which you learn you are a captive human abducted by an alien race building nefarious objects for them. This game gives you massive satisfaction when you finally watch your assembly line in motion after having spent hours designing and testing it. For anyone that is a fan of puzzle games, or maybe more accurately, problem-solving games, this is a must-play in my opinion. Thanks for all you do, guys. Thank you, Casey. Zachtronix is interesting. You say, they, when talking about him. My understanding is Zachtronix is one dude. One guy, Zach.
Right.
And he's got quite a bit of a cult following, and it's no wonder why. His games are really cool. They're all in that sort of puzzle, open solution idea where it really is any number of ways to do a thing, but sort of creating these little machines that do it. Opus Magnum is gorgeous and wonderful and satisfying in a number of ways. I haven't played Infinity Factory, but it makes me want to. Very cool. Thanks for sending in the review. All right, let's wrap the show up. Now we do have our parting gift coming up. But Mark DeSanto, thank you so much for being here, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can people keep up with you and all the stuff that you do online?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at HeyMarkD. And also you can check out my YouTube channel. It's I Eat Games. And next week, I should have a bunch of Sekiro stuff going up. I'm really jazzed for that game. Very excited for it.
And the hits just keep on coming. It's crazy.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, man, that game looks really interesting. How are you guys in the Dark Souls games? I can't remember if you're huge fans or...
I don't think either of us are what you would consider huge fans, but we've dabbled, and I've played quite a bit of Dark Souls 2. I'm not... Not a huge Souls guy.
Well, this is the departure from that, so it's going to be fun to see what they do with it.
For sure. All right, Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Twitter's the best way. If you're in LA, I'm doing maybe two spots when this comes out Monday. I'm thinking it's Sunday. When this comes out at the Comedy Store, if you're in LA and you're listening to this right now, go to the Comedy Store. I might be on stage. I'm going to be in San Diego. I'm trying to think of things that I know in advance. I'm going to be in San Diego on March 30th, doing two shows down there. My brain is totally blanking out right now. Twitter's the best way to find out, to find out about that. But March 30th, I'll be in San Diego. I think I'm going back down again in April. I don't know if when I'm out of LA other than that. And then I stream this show, live pretty much every Sunday at 7:15 PM Pacific time on my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. Brainworks. March 30th, I'm going to be at Madhouse for two shows in San Diego. And then I don't know the date right top of my head, but I believe in April, I'm going to be at Lestat's, headlining that on a Tuesday. But I'll tweet about it so you can find it there. Jeff, what about you?
Well, you can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. You can send emails to this show if you have any comments or questions or quick questions, anything that you have to share with us. We'd appreciate seeing it over at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And I have another podcast. If you're into movies and TV shows and you want to hear me talking about that stuff, I do so over on the /Filmcast, which you can find anywhere you get podcasts or by going to /Filmcast.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Mark, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
You know, actually, I do. So about a year ago, I got an Instant Pot.
I've heard good things about this.
Yeah. So I'm the cook in the family. I love to cook and I love to experiment and try new recipes and meals and stuff like that. Because cooking the same thing over and over is boring. But also the method at which you cook. That also can be boring sometimes, but it's interesting because I didn't think it would have – I didn't think I would use it as much as I do, but I've had it for a year, like I said, and I cook with it almost every night. So for me, simple things like the other night, I was going to serve some chicken on the side. And so because you can sear the chicken in the same pot that you're going to pressure cook it, it sort of eliminates how many dishes you need to prep and to cook. And it keeps it all in one pot and you can get chicken cooked. Well, so you set the timer for like 4 minutes, but it does need to build up pressure, which takes time. So, I mean, it is not instant by any means, but it is faster. And, I love it. I mean, there's a lot of really good recipe, books out there for like healthy instant pot, recipes and stuff. And I have found, something to be so good. There's one that dedicated to my current favorite cuisine, which is Indian food. And I highly recommend it for anybody. If you want something new in the kitchen, believe the hype. It's awesome. So that's, yeah.
Instant Pot. Do you have a particular brand you recommend?
Or? No, Instant Pot is the brand. By the way, it should be called Instapot, but it's actually Instant Pot. But we still call it an Instapot in my house. Mm. But yeah.
Well, I got that all kinds of wrong. Well,
but to be fair to you, there are actually a lot of other like instant pot that have come out since. Like there's one, I think it's called the Ninja, and it actually has like, I think it has like.
No, Mark. They're working on Ubisoft.
Oh,
games,
that's a, the Ninja. Oh, that's a streamer. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Or a streamer for, yeah.
Yeah, they pay $1 million for that instant pot. One day.
Anyway, there's a bunch of different brands and I love it. So I highly recommend cool. that. It has made my life easy.
Instant pot.
What about you guys?
Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
It's like Baba Is You, Jeff, where everyone had told me I would love this book. And I kept being like, yeah, I'm sure I'm going to love it. I am listening to it at Console Wars. Holy crikey.
Yeah.
It is incredible. And yes, I'm a kid who grew up, you know, playing in the era of the SNES and Genesis. But it's all about that, the battle of the 16-bit wars and where Nintendo was dominating the market in 8-bit and then Sega's rise, mostly in America. And just the history of video games and the way this book presents it, it is fascinating. And the way things that we take for granted today were just kind of happenstance of the era or the way things happened before, not that long ago in the grand scheme of things from where we are today. I cannot recommend this game enough. I believe it's been optioned to be a film. What did
game?
I say? Game. This book about games. This book, Console Wars, about all these games. I cannot recommend it enough. And if you were like me and you kept putting it off, saying like, yeah, I'll get to it. Find the time. Read it or listen to it. It is phenomenal. And I think even if you didn't grow up in the era, I still think you'll be captivated by it. I can't promise that because, you know, that's not my experience. But I love it. I absolutely love it. Console Wars. It is a book.
I can vouch for that and the fact that Christian has numerous times like, oh, Jeff, I read this part of Console Wars. You're not going to believe this.
It blows my mind every listen. It blows my – it's so good. And the audiobook is really well done as well.
Cool. Console Wars, the book. We got a listener-suggested parting gift. This comes to us – at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This one comes from Ben Miller, Ben J. Miller. Ben says, greetings. I would like to recommend an amazing podcast as a parting gift. The show is called Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People, or Beautiful Anonymous for short. It is a relatively simple premise where an anonymous caller calls in and has a one-on-one conversation with comedian Chris Gethard about anything and everything going on in their lives for 1 hour. There are episodes that are heartwarming, tragic, funny, and everything in between. Some of the best episodes to listen to are episode 1, titled Ron Paul's Baby, and episode 69, titled Love is Everywhere. But all of them are worth listening to. This is one of the few shows that really embodies your message of think of what you put out into the world, make it a better place. Chris does an amazing job of listening to real stories from real people and is my favorite weekly podcast, besides DLC, of course. You can find the full episode catalog on Stitcher, but the most recent shows are all on all podcast platforms. Love the show and keep up the great work. Thanks, Ben. I think it's a particularly good week to talk about things that make the world a better place. And
Gethard's great. Gethard's great.
So again, that's called Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. My parting gift is the fourth season of a show I am certain I have talked about before in previous seasons, but it's the fourth and final season for Catastrophe, which just started on Amazon Prime streaming, where it lives. Catastrophe is a really funny show, darkly funny. It's about a couple that has a one-night stand and that results in a baby, and then they sort of have to have a life together. The guy who's an American moves to England and starts a life there. And it's darkly funny. I mean, these people are kind of mean to each other, but my goodness, I really enjoy the show. My wife and I both like it. It deals with some real stuff, alcoholism, depression, how hard it is being a parent, lots of stuff. But I recommend it. I think you'll like it. It's called Catastrophe. I recommend starting with season 1, but the fourth and final season has just premiered on Amazon.
You said it's funny, though.
It is very funny.
We need a comedy, so maybe we'll check it out. We need something.
It is it's a dark comedy. It's dark, but it's funny. It's quite funny. If you want something lighter, last week I think I recommended Working Moms, which is another one that's great for parents to watch because it's much lighter.
Yeah.
Okay. But Netflix. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Mark DeSanto and Christian Spice for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat room for hanging out with all of us in real time, making the show better. We appreciate you. Thank you very much. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those cool bumpers. And thanks to you for downloading the show. We really appreciate it. Next week will be exciting. We'll be talking about GDC stuff, so be back for that. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.